We actually pitched our tents right next to David Christie's, if you can recall.
Right.
We also shared the common area between the tents where we made turns in preparing food, etc. And if you can recall, yes, it was a wonderful time we had there, Pastor. I think you also remember the drizzles and the storms that came past, the weather playing up against us at the time.
Yes.
But all in all, a very, very good time that we had at Blood River. Now, coming back to this particular article, I know David Christie actually posted on Facebook a discussion which very closely resembles this one, and it is the debate again, and it's a debate that has been going on ever since the subjugation of the Boers to the Afrikaners, and even before that. I also noted some of the typical debate being expressed in the writings of, and you will recall we visited General Mani Maritz's son, whom is also Mani Maritz. He was a well-known, world-renowned boxer, rather a wrestler, a world-renowned wrestler. He was, I think, also on a few occasions he received the title of world wrestler, and we had a lovely discussion and conversation with him in at the old age home where he was staying at the time of the partial rebuilding of their farmhouse. I've actually spoken to some of his family, and on a next from your side, Pastor, we have the go-ahead to actually go and visit him again on the farm.
Yes.
Now, something that I can add about this debate has been becoming very fierce in the past few, well, I would say in the past few years, the past 4 years especially, ever since I discovered or that I could find the very deep distinction in the roots and the heritage and the origins of these two groups. Of course, we have been belied to over the past three centuries in terms of the history. One of the things that we know, and I think it was, I can't remember who wrote it, but who said it, but the winners in a war always rewrites the history.
Sure.
And it is something that we have seen in South Africa, the Afrikaners having rewritten the history to suit, of course, their agenda over the past three generations. And the past three generations have been mindedly impregnated with their version of the history as the way that they wanted it to be known. And as of late, over the past 4 years, I've made many discoveries of original sources that actually indicate that the Cape Dutch Afrikaners enticed and incited the Anglo-Boer War. They had even, and we spoke about it on this program, the Jameson invasion,
Yes.
how Jameson, the one of the top management individuals in Cecil John Rhodes' businesses, Jameson became the orchestrator of the Jameson invasion into the Boer republics,
Yeah, an
with the
attempt to
intention of
blaming the
in with the
Boers, yes.
with the with the intention of having the Boer republics and the Boere Volksraad
Right.
to believe that it is an invasion or an attack by Britain, and then to entice or to trigger the Boer republics to declare war on Britain.
Yes.
That was the
Okay.
idea, and
Yes.
of
Okay.
course, that didn't work the way that they really
Yes.
wanted to. And some fresh information of that had also been exposed in terms of some of the minor details that occurred at this time, and then also beyond that. But in essence, the Cape Dutch Freemasons and the Edomite Jews, of course, the Afrikaners are also from they also originate from the Edomite tribes.
Cape Dutch, yes.
And the distinction lies in this, and people didn't realize this for a long time.
Hold on one second, David, because apparently the audience didn't hear your opening comments. So let me just re-ask you and restate, because we've talked about the ethnic differences between the Boer people and the Afrikaners. And so let's just stick to that concept and and talk about that, please. Okay. And let me just go ahead and give us an introduction, and I'll talk about David Christie's article.
Okay. I'm just trying to sort it out in my own mind as to how far I should retrace on this, Pastor. But yes, there's a definite difference between the vast difference between the origins of the Cape Dutch Afrikaners. Well, they eventually became the Afrikaners, and the Boers who came to South Africa as what they were called as Freeburgers. In other words, they were Freeburgers in the sense that they were not associated directly to the Dutch East Indian Company or the Verenigde Oost-Indische Compagnie, which is the United East Indian Company. They were merely passengers, but in order to pay for their passage, they had to pay. They had to work for a given period it was a payback time or a payback period that they had to pay for their passage from Europe to to the Cape.
Yeah, so and this only applies to the Boer people who were primarily of Germanic origin, and we've talked in the past about some French and maybe even some Dutch, some real Dutch, right? But they were essentially Israelites of Pharez Judah, who had been living in Europe and eventually migrated down to Africa, correct? This would be the true origin of the Boer people.
Yes, Pastor. But in particular, they were from Germany, primarily from Germany, and also from the Republic of Prussia.
Prussia, okay.
The French Huguenots only came to South Africa in the 1760s. I think the 1767, 1768.
Okay.
And there were only 207 French Huguenots that came to South Africa, but they were the only ones that were really persecuted to the point of distinction or extinction, because of the upliftment of the Edict of Nantes. So they had to flee France because of the King of France that had previously been tolerant of the non-Catholics had the edict that protected them was uplifted, and of course that was then the end of their time of peace, and they were being persecuted and they had to flee.
Okay.
But prior to that occurred nearly 170 years after the initial Freeburgers fled Europe.
So the Huguenots
to
really
become
don't
the
count.
Boers, eventually to
yeah, they don't count as Boers, would be fair to say.
Although
they might be of similar.
They do. There were many of these French Huguenots that remained in the colony, but some of them did, in fact, take on the Great Trek or participated in the Great Trek.
I see.
And in other words, there was amalgamation of these people that came from France with those that had already been here previously or from an earlier movement of people from Europe to the Cape.
Right. Okay. Well, now, let me just say now, because I really want to stick to this topic here, before the show we were talking about you were visited by the angel, and the angel told you to that your future ministry is to be the expositor of this difference between the Boers and the Afrikaners, and you have been getting nothing but flack from people ever since you started exposing this fact. And but at the same time, you're gratified that some of your earlier detractors are now coming on board with this message. Yes, that yes, there is a difference between the Boers and the Afrikaners. Please relate your experiences recently.
Pastor, yes. I've had on numerous occasions people that are greatly opposed to the message that I bring in terms of the deep division between the Boers and the Afrikaners because of their heritage and because of their origin and because of course, tracing them all the way back to Jacob and Esau. Mm-hmm. And there's this very evident, and it's this can be seen throughout the history of South Africa, throughout the history of the two main white, so-called white groups in southern Africa, the Cape Dutch and the Boers, or the Freeburgers in terms of the Boers. This distinction can be seen so clearly. The Cape Dutch came to South Africa to exploit the position of the Cape in terms of their trade routes and the control of both spices and the heroin that they were trading from Thailand and Burma, and so there's a
wow.
It was not just spices, it was also drugs, but they don't like this to be known.
Yeah,
because right. and this is a fact, and also because the Dutch East Indian Company was a company that was initiated and inaugurated and executed and run by
Edomite right.
Jews,
yes. And Dutch Jews. The East India Company was run by Jews, yeah. It's just that simple.
And then, of course, they ensured that their agents and the administrators and the people that they would send abroad, for example, to Cape Town or to the Cape of Good Hope, in the person of Jan van Riebeeck, would also be, of course, of their kind. And that's mm-hmm. the way they've been operating all the years. And even to this day, you won't find that a Jewish jeweler in South Africa would very easily or very, I would say with a happy heart, appoint a somebody from whom is a true Israelite.
Right.
They like to utilize and appoint
yes.
the people of their creed and kind. But if we do it as Boers,
right.
then we become racists and we become... Yeah. We executing commissions of injustice because we are now drawing distinction between peoples. We are nepotists.
Yeah.
But if they
well,
do
the
it,
Jews do that.
That
the tradition. Jews do that all the time.
They can do it.
Right?
They're doing it all the time.
Okay, well, here, let me quote from the article here because this is something that really needs to be understood by everybody. And I wasn't aware because David Christie's name is not on this article. But you recognized it as his work. So I'm just going to
quote right.
here and just interrupt when you feel necessary, or I'll have questions.
Yes.
The following, I hope, will yes. be an informative explanation contrasting and outlining the difference between the once notable historical differences between the two main white Afrikaans-speaking groups, as I have discerned from spending time examining the history of the groups and the region in question. The term Afrikaner and the term Boer once denoted two distinct groups in the not-so-distant past. All right, so David Christie is saying, well, this difference was recognized at one time in South Africa, and the distinction has become blurred. What caused the blurring of the distinction, Pastor Martens?
Pastor, after the subjugation of the Boers to the Afrikaners at the end of the Anglo-Boer War, 1902, there was a period when the Boers were again, I think in 1906, they were given control of the Boer republics again. But that was one of the conditions of the peace treaty of Vereniging, that they would again control their Boer republics. But that was only for a very short period of time, 1906, I think, to 1909. after which the Union of South Africa was established. And of course, that was a whole illegal complot for the purpose of actually unmanning let's call it a sort of castration of the Boers, but because once you lose your ground, once you lose your foothold on the ground that belonged to you, then of course you standing virtually naked, you being stripped of everything you own, you being stripped of everything you have. And that was the whole idea and purpose for the Cape Dutch Afrikaners to in fact entice the Anglo-Boer War, because they were initially all they wanted to do was to eradicate, exterminate the Boers, because they were being, they felt that they were being checkmated by the Israelites, and they knew that the Boers were Israelites, but they denied the Boers to identify as Israelites, because they pounded them with the Roman Reformed churches also participated greatly in this. In fact, it was only a matter of about 15 to 20 years that the Boers had relinquished their knowledge or their acknowledgement of the fact that they were Israelites. They were taken up into the Afrikaner churches because of poverty. They were deprived of the Boer republics.
So this is how the Boer people became integrated into the Afrikaner people. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. And Mr. Christie says further, while it is easy for many people of Boer descent to not realize the difference due to the fact that they were often brought up to think of themselves as Afrikaners, the fact of the matter is... Yeah, right. And now let me just finish a sentence here. The fact of the matter is that there is indeed a valid and poignant difference between the two terms, since it relates to two distinct cultural groups. Now, isn't it the case... Yes. That the Boer people, have considered themselves to be of Israelite extraction, and which is not true of the Afrikaners.
Absolutely so, Pastor. Okay. In fact, for a long period of time, I would say at least 50 to 60 years after the formation of the Union of South Africa, the Afrikaner churches preached that everybody in the church was now Israelites. They deemed themselves.
That's a knee slap.
I'm getting some feedback back into into my earphones from my speaking, but I can deal with that, Pastor. I will just ignore that. But what I wanted to say is they preach that once you become a member of their churches, you're part of the spiritual Israel, and the spiritual Israel has right now to claim all the promises of the Almighty. And of course, they also brought in the Afrikaans translated Bible, at least the King James Version has the name Jehovah, I think, a matter of five or seven times. But the Afrikaans Bible, in the Afrikaans Bible, the Freemason led, the Afrikaans Bible was translated by a group of men that consisted primarily of Dutch Reformed or Roman Catholicism Reformed ministers and the Roman Catholicism Reformed professors of theology.
And who would not relate to the Boer people at all.
Exactly. They were Afrikaners. They were Cape Dutch and descendants of the Cape Dutch.
Yes.
Now, to this extent, the Boers, having been robbed of their two Boer republics, after the Union of South Africa, thousands upon thousands of these Boers were actually disowned of their farms. Mm-hmm. So they lost their farms. They weren't paid for their farms. And the £3 million which the British government paid South Africa in terms of to rebuild the Boers' livestock and whatever that was eradicated during the scorched earth policy, was not used to replenish or to reimburse the Boers, but it was used to further Jan Smuts and Louis Botha's political parties so that they could take control and maintain control of the Union of South Africa, with the Boers being sidewiped out of the picture in terms of access to work, access to all the privileges which the Cape Dutch Afrikaners then started enjoying within the Boer republics. Now, a very important issue on this is that the only way that the Boers could survive, because they didn't have their livestock anymore, it was, remember that they were, thousands of them were disowned from their farms. Now, there was no way that these Boers could survive other than becoming stone breakers or stone rockers. Mm-hmm. On the newly formed Union of South Africa's railway lines, building railway lines, building new roads, building bridges, building and digging tunnels through mountains, etc., for
hard labor,
new roads, etc.
Hard labor.
Hard labor.
From being farmers, now suddenly it's hard labor. Back to you.
And then, of course, also the mines. They were working as laborers in the mines. But then the Jews, who controlled the mines, and, of course, their administrators, who were Cape Dutch Afrikaners, decided to retrench or get rid of the Boers because they could get cheaper labor from blacks by importing blacks from neighboring countries. So they did that, and that, of course, led to industrial strife, because the Boers, many Boers, were released of their services as diggers in the mines, and this led to a lot of industrial strife. The Boers protested against being retrenched without payment, and the blacks took their jobs, and of course that then led to a situation where the blacks that had been brought in from neighboring countries started protesting, because they realized that they were now starting at lower wages than the Boers had been receiving.
Yeah.
But at least they had a job.
Yes,
but
at least they had a job, which they didn't have in the country they came from, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, when the Boers... the Boers were shot and killed by the Cape Dutch Afrikaners, who had the control of the Union government. So the Boers became the target for their firing, or them firing, and the blacks were rounded up and taken into jail to again steal and destroy and burn at a later stage.
Right.
Now, it is very evident that these events were not merely coincidental. These events were finely orchestrated during the time that the Cape Dutch and the Jews like Cecil John Rhodes and also the Freemasons had
the Rothschilds,
conspired against the Boers. The Rothschilds were brought in afterwards, because the Rothschilds only came in onto this conspiracy or as agents to this conspiracy at a later stage, after the first Anglo-Boer War had already finished. But the second Anglo-Boer War, that was the one where the Rothschilds were already deeply involved in orchestrating, but also in bringing the British government virtually onto its knees, because they were controlling the money of the British government. And of course, for Lord Rothschild to lay his hands on these mineral wealths and
diamonds and gold,
wealth,
right?
South Africa.
Yes.
He wanted
Jewish
that,
eyes
and
go wide open.
that would put him in control of the world's richest mines, deposits, etc. That was known at that time. Also, that would fund the establishment of Israel as it is today.
Yes. Okay. So here, I'd like to stay finely tuned to the topic at hand, namely the distinction.
Yes.
And all the history you're presenting is very accurate and certainly involved. But I want to stay on this topic of the distinction between the Boer people and the Afrikaners. Now, you were telling me before the show that many of the people who were originally turned against you And it was about 4 years ago that you and I started doing these shows where you were explaining these differences. And many people turned their backs on you, but some of them have returned, you were telling me, even to the point where you were invited to do an interview, I guess, last Friday?
Yes.
Okay.
Pastor, yes. It is a person who has been very prominent in the production of videos, very strongly motivated production of videos about the concentration camps in South Africa, and his name, I'm going to mention him in particular, Rudy Rousseau.
Okay.
A few months ago, I would say about perhaps 8 or 9 months ago it might be, he spoke with me and he said to me, Dave, this story that you're telling about the Anglo-Boer War, about the Cape and the Cape Dutch and the Afrikaners and the Boers being different people, etc. You must rethink that. You must relinquish that because you're causing division. And I said to him, Rudy, no.
Yes.
And at the time, I didn't convince him because he was talking to other people and he was displaying where he was actually mentioning some of the things that I had said which he didn't like, etc. But not so long ago, he contacted me and he said to me, Dave, wanted to make a show of what you're saying. And it eventually occurred, or it eventually turned out to happen on day before yesterday.
Okay.
And it was just amazing in this interview, and this played off at the Blouberg Strand, which is a very prominent and a very popular beach facing Table Mountain and the Cape City Bull. It gives an absolute beautiful view of Cape Town right from the beach and, of course, across the sort of bay that is formed by the mm-hmm. shoreline. And during this show or this recording of this video, on a number of occasions, I would say something and he would actually stop and say, Dave, no, I want you to say more on this. And he would actually prompt me, tell the people about this and this and this. And it was so encouraging to realize that this man who actually opposed me not mm-hmm. so many months ago has now seen the light and he has seen the difference. And he said to me, Dave, I have had the confirmation on so many of the things that you've said, even somebody who had done 5 years research on certain of the aspects. And confirmed, he said to me just the previous day, he had the 2-hour interview with the particular lady who did a lot of research, 5 years of her life she spent researching some of these issues on concentration camps. And she confirmed basically what I had said. Yes, these people came from different backgrounds, etc. Okay. And I could see the joy on his face when I started talking and
praise Yahweh.
The way in which became excited. Mm-hmm. And of course,
yeah, he found out who he was.
There was still a lot, or there is still a lot for him to get, I would say, get his mind over. But there's so many things, so positive. He's so positive about this. And the fact that he said to me, it's so important that we get this video out as soon as possible. The people need to know that there's a distinction and a deep ravine between the Boers and the Afrikaners. They are not of the same stock. They are not of the same heritage.
Absolutely.
They don't have the
praise
same
Yahweh. Yes.
Future.
Now, it's my turn to do a sidelight. Actually, I want you to do this sidelight because it's so fascinating. Because we have to understand, and you've been saying over and over again, that only the Boer people were ever in concentration camps, never the Afrikaners, and never any other people. And one of the people involved in the video tried to assert that, well, there were black people in concentration camps too. And you said, no, that's a misunderstanding. Could you go into that, please?
Yes, Pastor. Some time ago, I mentioned that there were no black concentration camps during the Anglo-Boer War at all. I could not read anything about the black concentration camp, and I've done quite a bit of reading on this. I've scanned through quite a number of books. I could not at any stage see anything about concentration camps for blacks. But what I could find was that they were labor camps, or they were designated as labor camps during this time when the British could not overrun the Boers as they had intended or initially intended that they could overrun the Boers in a matter of 10 weeks. And that was the period of time that the First Anglo-Boer War was, and they came back with so much more revenge and so much more, I said they came back as an allied force with the Australians, New Zealanders, the Indians, the Canadians, the Welsh, Irish, Scottish, etc. From across the globe, they came as an allied force against the Boers, and they were trained soldiers against farmers, and there were so many things that counted against the Boers, yet they could not overrun the Boers. The Boers could uphold the defense lines so incredibly in so many instances. However, coming back to when the British could not overrun the Boers, or shall I rather say when the Cape Dutch Afrikaners agents could not overrun the Boers, they resorted to buying up slaves, black slaves from African countries. Uh-huh. And they brought them to South Africa into these labor camps where during a period of time they would train these blacks as soldiers. And after they had been trained as soldiers, they were then actually commissioned to go out with the various British garrisons.
Okay.
Into the field.
So these were not concentration camps. These were actually training camps where these black Africans were being taught how to make war against the Boers.
That's correct, Pastor.
Okay.
Now,
big difference.
He said to me during this interview with this lady, I'm not sure whether it was before the interview or during the interview, he questioned this, are you sure that there were black concentration camps? And the lady said, well, she researched it, but she will just make sure. And she actually went and revisited some of her investigations and the research, and she came back and she said, you're perfectly right. There were no black concentration camps. Those camps that were, in fact, used for the blacks were for the purpose of training. And also there were certain labor camps, those labors, where certain of the
like Auschwitz. Military, sorry,
but where the military, for example, required bridges to be built where there were no bridges before, purely for the movement of personnel and people, etc. That is where those laborers came in on those labor camps, but they were never the target of any fighting. They had rather been something that I just read during the course of today was that on at least two occasions President Paul Kruger laid charge to and he complained to the British High Commissioner that blacks that had been employed and deployed by the British soldiers or the British war machine, in spite of the fact that some of the Boer women had raised the white flag that they were surrendering to the British, they kept on firing, and afterwards that they actually did a lot of emotional and also physical damage to these women. Now, the book that I read did not state that they were raped.
Okay.
But I think it was in a certain sense on these two occasions, President Paul Kruger complained that these women were not dealt with in terms of the normal agreements in terms of war. If there is a white flag raised, the fighting should stop, and it didn't.
Right. Very good. Okay, so another myth dispelled. Excellent. All right. So turning back to this article by David Christie. The Boers are the descendants of those semi-nomadic early migrating farmers who were known as the Trek Boers, who first trekked or moved away from the Cape Colony and colonial society in general during the late 1600s and 1700s due to their poorer status and the fact that they found the autocratic VOC regulations intolerable. What's the VOC?
Pastor, that is the Verenigde Oost-Indies Compagnie, which means it is a United East Indian Company that embraced or that contained or that controlled the Dutch East Indian Company as well as the Dutch West Indian Company, a united, and that was also like the head office of these two branches of the same organization.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so one group is, in other words, the VOC is the Cape Dutch / Afrikaners.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And he says, this act alone would be the essence of the difference between the Boers and the Afrikaners who had remained in the Cape colony, as it was the beginning of a cultural gulf which stretches back to Europe before they were brought to the Cape. All right, he says, the Afrikaans historian Brian de Toit, T-O-I-T, states on page 1 of his book on the Boer diaspora, which went to East Africa following the Anglo-Boer War, that the Boers were formed on the frontiers of white settlement and on the outskirts of civilization, while the Afrikaners in the Cape, on the other hand, were not. This is the crux of why the Cape Afrikaners were pro-colonial and the Boers were anti-colonial. Mm. Okay, so there's a huge, not just ethnic difference, but, you know, the experience, let's put it this way, the experience of the Boer people was more as farmers and as, you know, as he uses the term, semi-nomadic, because they had cattle too, and they were forced to move and move and move again, while the Cape Dutch were pretty much settled at the Cape and stayed there, maybe having economic trade with the Boer people, but never being considered the same people. Over to you.
Pastor, yes, the Cape Dutch, they consisted of people who saw themselves as the aristocrats. They became extremely rich because of the fact that they had all the benefits of the protection of the VOC. And also as agents of the VOC, they had a first right to the sale of their products, etc. Although the very gardens that were built to produce these products that they supplied to the ships, these very gardens were built by the people who came in across from Europe as free burghers. And
Boers.
Remember what I said, that they had to work a period of time back to the VOC for the fact that they were brought as passengers on the ships.
Uh-huh.
So the gardens were built and cultivated initially by these freeburgers.
Yes.
And of course, once the 3 years period had lapsed, they would have to buy land on the outskirts of the perimeters, outer perimeters of the settlements.
That's the economic relationship then between the Boers and the Cape Dutch. Namely, the Boers provided the goods, the farm goods and possibly other goods as well, that were crucial to the Cape operation itself and also to what was transported on the ships, correct?
Pastor, the Boers were in fact not the first suppliers. They were the, in case everything else had been sold out, they could then provide the...
Okay.
It was one of the things that they had been promised, access to the market, but they were denied the access to the market in favor of the market that the Dutch East Indian Company started cultivating themselves, or had appointed slaves to do that in the state of the Boers.
Yeah, so it was the Cape Dutch who imported slaves, not the Boers.
Correct.
Okay.
Pastor, there were some Boers that did appoint or that did buy slaves. One of the things that the Cape Dutch Afrikaners and Freemasons, of course, propagated as propaganda across the globe prior to the First Anglo-Boer War even, and in fact it was already in the mid-1860s, that they propagated the lie that the Boers had started the Great Trek because they did not want to relinquish their slaves, which was an utter lie. I've actually seen quite a number of entries into books where members of the Boers who, before they could trek, that they had to sell their slaves back to what they called very similar to what would perhaps be today people who people who porn.
Okay.
Not pornography, yeah, yeah. But rather
pawning junk, right? Cheap goods.
That's right. So
yes,
and where they had to appoint somebody who would then make a representation for and on their behalf to Britain for the repayment of the money for that slave. In other words, it's a buyback. So Britain buys back the slave, but the person who sold the slave back to Britain had to go and fetch their money in London itself.
Wow.
So you can imagine these Strasbourgers, yes. They've spent 2 years just to repay their passage from Europe to the Cape of Good Hope.
Yes.
And now for them to go back all the way to Britain to go and fetch their money that they had to receive
incredible.
Back or payment for the slave. So
incredible.
They did relinquish their slaves. But there was quite a number of slaves who did not want to stay in the Cape. They wanted to go with the Boers. They would rather They would rather go in this great trek with the Boers than to remain in this in the Cape amongst the Cape Dutch Afrikaners.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all.
They must have said they were Jews. Days,
but
yeah, go ahead.
Something that must also be said, Pastor, is that the name Afrikaner only started originating in the mid-1860s, 1870s.
Really?
That was a surname that was adopted by a colored tribe by the name of Jonker Afrikaner. The Afrikaner was the surname that was adopted by a group of people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And why the Cape Dutch had adopted that name as Afrikaner was purely on a, I would say, in terms of the agenda which they followed, because you must remember that the Boer Republic of Transvaal had changed its name at some stage to the Boer Republic of South Africa, Zuid-Afrikaanse Republiek.
Right.
Now, that was one of the things that they wanted. Now, you must remember that irrespective of where these Jews, these Khazarian Jews go, they assimilate very easily amongst any race and sure. any kind across
yes.
the globe.
Yeah. yeah.
They assimilate for the purpose of undermining and then finally taking over. And that was also why you read the word Jews in the Bible, because the tribe of Judah
Real
and the
Jews.
Tribe of Benjamin,
yes.
they were called Judah across the whole of the scriptures up
yeah.
to some point.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden it changes to Jews. Now the reason why this change occurs in terms of the translations of the Bible, because in the original language in the Hebrew, it still remains Judahites or the Judeans.
Yehuda,
but in
yes.
the translations of the scriptures, all of a sudden it becomes Jews.
Yes.
Now the purpose for that becoming Jews is so that the Khazarians and the Edomites that have infiltrated amongst the Judahites have now a sort of a blanket that they can hide themselves under and deem themselves and present themselves as if they are also Judahites. So
right.
they have become
course.
Jews. But it's only in the translations.
Yeah.
It was not at the time when the scriptures were written. It was only after that. And I think I have a date of somewhere about 400 years or 700 years after the books of the Bible was written, that the
yes.
word Jew was inserted instead of Judahites.
Right. Well, it's
now,
interesting.
Exactly in the same way.
Yeah. Yeah.
In exactly the same way, the Boers have been subjugated to the Afrikaners or the Cape Dutch at the time. They liked the name Afrikaners, so they had this blanket, this Afrikaner blanket drawn across both the Boers
and
Edomites in
yes.
order so that they could now hide themselves amongst the Boers
right.
and eradicate this
well,
difference.
Yeah, isn't exactly what happened in Judea? Actually, it started out as Judea, and unfortunately
yes.
King John Hyrcanus began circumcising Edomites and integrating them into Judahite society. Therefore, the country became known as Judea, a combination of Judah and Idumea, okay? And that's really where the word Jew comes from the idea.
Yes.
So it's actually a designation of Edomites pretending to be Judah is really what the word Jew means. And that's how we understand it in Christian identity, right? Now, but it's very interesting that actually the more I think about our economic relationship to Jews here in America, in the early days, even up to the Civil War, a lot of white people were getting in debt to Jewish bankers, and that was the reason why they would become pioneers to get away. You know, some of them had committed crimes, too, and they just wanted to get away, so they became pioneers. So in essence, many of the pioneers were simply running away from Jews who had bills of credit that they owed to
against
Jews.
Them, yes.
Right, just like you're telling now about the Boer farmers.
Well, that is exactly what the situation was with Piet Retief. You can remember Piet Retief, that they had been killed along with, I think, 32 of his commando men.
Right, right.
Because Piet Retief had been indebted to Freemasons in the Cape, and then he had gone to the Eastern Cape as a track boer, and he had debts there with the Freemasons because he himself was a Freemason.
Uh-huh.
And so his debt moved along with him. And the story that I read was that he had told some of his Freemason friends in Port Natal, which today is known as Durban, that he wanted to negotiate some land with Dingaan, the Zulu king at the time, or at the time Dingaan and Cetshwayo, his brother, were in war with one another for the throne, and Dingaan then
and the Piet Retief, they got caught in the middle.
When he negotiated, of course, he told the Freemasons was that he would then sell the land to the Boers, and then with that money he would repay his debts to the Freemasons.
He was killed by the Zulu instead, so that never happened. Okay, right. Very interesting. Well, that's what happens when you get in debt, right, to the Jews. Okay, so David Christie continues, while the Afrikaners, and we only have about 6 minutes left, but this is an important statement he makes here, while the Afrikaners on the Cape, on the other hand, were not tending to fortrekkers. They weren't fortrekkers. This is the crux of why the Cape Afrikaners were pro-colonial and the Boers were anti-colonial. This was a trait which would later play a significant role during the Second Anglo-Boer War. In other words, the Afrikaners were the oppressors. The Boer were the oppressed. Plain and simple. Okay? He continues, when a significant number of the Trek Boers were settled down on the Eastern Cape frontier by the late 1700s, they became known as the Grensboere, or the border farmers. Yeah, on the border, on the outskirts, on the frontier. Okay, frontier Boers would be another word. In fact, he uses that, Cape frontier. It was from the Grensboere and a number of still Trek Boers that the vast majority of the fortrekkers would later come after the local Boers were tired of British imperialistic colonial oppression / Xhosa attacks / constant frontier wars and growing land shortages during what was later called the Great Trek. Your elaboration on this point with about 5 minutes left, please.
Pastor, that is very close to what it was, except that you didn't pronounce that word Xhosa correctly.
Hey, I got it. Xhosa.
Xhosa.
All right. I got to get that click in there.
Xhosa.
All right. Yes. Very good. I have to go to South Africa to learn the Xhosa language. Okay. So what we see here is, it's obvious that the ethnic difference between the Boer and Afrikaners was very stark at the beginning, very stark at the beginning. The relationship was oppressor to the oppressed. Now, all of a sudden, the history books are telling the Boers and Afrikaners, no, you've always been the same people.
That's correct.
That's lies.
Which, of course, is an utter lie. It's an utter lie.
Yeah. Yeah. And now you're being called out. Certain people are calling you a racist and whatnot because you're pointing out, no, these are not the same. Now, wasn't Wilson's 14 points one of them? The major point was that each ethnic group has the right to self-determination? What happened to that?
At the moment, because we have a black government that was brought about by the Afrikaner-dominated politics at the time.
Yes.
Of course, the Afrikaner Freemasonry politics dominated. And now today, the Afrikaners are crying and they are demanding so-called self-beskikking, which is self-government.
Yes.
And yet, by the same token, they have they've stolen the Boers' right to self-determination, self-government. They robbed them of their ground, their land, which was already declared as sovereign
made
by the British government. And
there's
also
no end. There's no end. The oppression has never ended, is what you're saying, correct?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And even today, if you go to the UNPO, the Unrepresented People's Organization's website, and you look at the Afrikaners' registration on that, you will see that these Cape Dutch Afrikaners are purporting to be Boers, and they openly state there that the Afrikaners did not like the or they were opposed to the colonialism, and they started the Great Trek. Uh-huh. And they even go as far as saying that the Afrikaners established the Boer republics. It's
wow.
Like saying that the
Jews established America.
Established,
really?
The Jews established the German republics.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Utterly
it's
ridiculous.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
It's laughable.
But past it,
okay.
It even goes beyond that. And it's something that I have pulled the jockey on them on a number of times. They are calling the Boere Afrikaner Volksraad. It is like saying the Jewish German or the...
right. Now, was there ever a time, with only about 2 minutes left, was there ever a time where the Boer people and the Afrikaners were actually allied with each other in reality? Or were the Afrikaners simply exploiting the Boers during all of these historical periods?
For the past three generations, the Boers have been in not just subjugated state, but they have also been under a type of narcotic state.
Yeah, it's called deception.
Also... I actually make the statement that they have been hypnotized by the Cape Dutch Afrikaner Church's preachers, and they are under the hypnotic state. Not the hypnotic, but the...
I will send you a delusion, a strong delusion.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of the Boers still believe that they are Afrikaners, and... In fact, I think about 4% of the Boers believe that they are truly Boers, believe that they are Afrikaners. About 4% of the Boers who are actually Boers know that they are Boers. The rest believe that they are Afrikaners. And unfortunately, about 6% of the Afrikaners believe that they are Boers.
Well, okay, we have to cut it short here. You've got your work cut out for you, Pastor Martens, but we're here to help you, all right?
Greatly appreciated, Pastor.
Yes. All right, folks, thanks for listening. And this story is not going to end soon, and the Boer people will regain their independence. Praise Yahweh. Thank you, Pastor Martens.
Praise Yahweh.
Okay.
Thanks for
listening, folks.
Thank you, Pastor.
Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. We'll see you next time.